The Live Event Workers Podcast is supported by IOTC, the union behind entertainment.
This is the Live Event Worker Podcast. We're talking to live event workers about their jobs and about their future.
If you had the privilege of working outside of your state or traveling for work, you can identify a stagehand anywhere. You can pick them out of a crowd, right? It's more than the clothes. It's more than how they speak. It really is something spirit-wise. You feel like, man, I know this guy, right? This kept us strong. But back in the day, it was based on that culture and a word of mouth. In order to secure a craftsman of high level, you had to have a close personal relationship with someone who had this skill. And then that was the word of mouth that got you onto the scene. Once you were on the scene, you then proved yourself and you were able to pass that down. So that was the way we used to operate.
That was stagehand and crew chief Kareem Boyd talking about how live event workers find jobs. According to a 2016 report from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and Yale University, 70% of jobs are found through networking, the process of making connections and building relationships. CNBC reports that 80% of jobs are never published publicly at all. These jobs are either posted internally or are created specifically for candidates. Most potential employment exists in this hidden job market. An estimated 12 million people work in live events. The average concert requires nearly 500 people to make it happen, from concessions and ticket takers to truck drivers, technical crew, and everyone in between. But following an industry-wide shutdown, our professional networks broke. The connections and relationships that provide jobs were pulled and stretched when overnight an entire workforce came to a grinding halt. How do we repair our professional networks and return live event workers to the prosperity they deserve? How do people navigate the hidden job market? We're talking with live event workers about networking and building meaningful, sustainable careers in the live event industry. Joining us are three workers. From Charlotte, North Carolina, Lorenzo Mack. From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Kareem Boyd. And from Denver, Colorado, Bryant Preston. Why are most jobs for live event workers never advertised? Bryant?
I think traditionally they weren't advertised. I don't know that that's the truth anymore. And maybe that's because we're coming out of the pandemic and employers are realizing that those networks are, as you said, frayed and no longer as tight-knit as they were. I think the pandemic showed that any moment somebody could be gone, and that job as written is not what the individual in it was doing. And so I think it's difficult for employers to figure out how to phrase those jobs to get the person they're looking for.
Lorenzo?
Well, at least in the entertainment world, it seems like we have this weird cross section of technical work that requires specific expertise and art, and also a lot of human interaction. I personally don't want to work with someone who is super great at their job, but we work day in and day out and they're a jerk. I see my colleagues more than I see my wife and my friends. So I really need to be working with good people all the time.
How do you define networking?
I like to look at networking as reciprocal or mutualism, basically. So I'm not getting a person's name and number to gain something from them. I would much rather, do the good work. And if you want to refer me to someone, cool. And if there's someone I can refer to you to help you, great. Because ultimately, we've got a lot of entertainment jobs and a lot of people who are looking to fill them. And I want to make sure that the work is getting done, like more than anything.
Kareem?
Just take the simple two words. If you just take the net and working, I think you have to be gathered and you have to be working, right? Those things have to happen. I can remember going to what school used to call networking events. And it would be like these stale rooms. You're kind of forced to be cattled into this area and to communicate with each other. And I really didn't get anything from those experiences. I learned early in our industry that it is about the rubbing of elbows, right? It's about being in the in that working environment. It was about being there. And you'll notice that in our industry, we probably have the most volunteers around us for that instance, right? We want to be on the scene. What do I got to do? People will come out for no money just to get on that scene and get to rub elbows. That's, at least that's the way it used to be.
I think I define networking as a group of people that either have a like goal as yours or can help you achieve your goal. Traditionally, you're going to lean on your friendships or your professional contacts. If you don't have those, you've got an uphill battle, and you've got to find a way to build those pretty quickly.
Then how did you join this live event industry?
I mean, I followed my brother into this industry. So, you know, he's 5 years older than me, and he would often call me on the phone to troubleshoot things he was doing on the job, because that was my background, was audiovisual and computer networking. So that would be the way that I got into this industry.
100% through a referral. I mean, first off, the only job I've ever really interviewed for was a job that I didn't have in entertainment. It's a finance job I thought I should have had coming out of college. Obviously, I'm not in finance anymore. But my first job was at Davidson College, and you know, I needed a job that worked with my football schedule while I was playing, when I was playing there, and the dean of students referred me to my mentor, a guy who's like my uncle, Jim Nash. He was running the technical services department there, which ran the main theater and anything involving tech, audio, lights, video around campus. I spent 3 years with Jim, and I did a lot of work with him, a lot of work. I go do this finance job. I get laid off from the finance job, and I call Jim that same day I get laid off. And he tells me, I have a show for you tomorrow. Come on and get on it. So I'm back working full time now as an adult in the entertainment industry at Davidson College.
Yeah. For me, it has been a life journey. I didn't know what I was becoming, didn't know where I was going, and had no clue what this meant. It was a natural progression within my life. I don't know if that happens to everyone. So for example, to give you some examples, my father was the, lead coordinator for closed captioning studios that were built for the School District of Philadelphia. So he built the very first studio, for the school district, which was off by the Schuylkill River. And then he installed the, you know, mechanisms so that they could receive that broadcast inside of each one of these ancient schools that, you know, Philadelphia has. So this was his job for a living, right? So I grew up, I want you to picture, instead of books, I just had, beta tapes, you know, and instead of, game systems, my father gave me cameras. And I'm constantly playing with technology, while he's at work, you know, while he's doing his thing, I'm standing under him, constantly playing with work. So that exposure was so normal. You can see why I didn't believe that this was anything special, right? It was normal to be everywhere we went. He had a camera, he had his bag. So this then leads me to, well, where am I going to go for high school? I have no real talent, right? Where am I going to go? Not particularly happy about school, so I can't say I was the greatest student. My father's like, hey, there's this place called Creative and Performing Arts High School. I'm going to stick you in there. So I go to this school. They're like, all right, you got to audition. I'm like, audition? I don't do anything. What am I going to audition? And he takes me, my father says, all right, well, before you audition, go into the front, go to front of house and, you know, get everything prepped, get ready for your, you know, for what the performance that you're going to give. So I went in the front of house and he's talking to the teacher. I don't know what they're talking about, but I'm just checking mics, getting the mic ready. I don't know what I'm getting ready to do. Get the mic ready, you know, set the mics up. I come back down and I'm like, all right, I'm ready. And the teacher goes, yeah, you don't have to audition, kid. You're going to be great around here. You're going to be our stage hand. None of us know how to work this equipment. So you're in, right? I still had to do a monologue. I don't want to get the school in trouble. They still made me do a monologue to prove that I had the artistic value. So I inherited it while I was there.
Do you think your career path in live events is like most others in your position?
I came from a school that really isn't known for theater at all. We're, you know, we're a top 10 private liberal arts college. We're not known for theater. We're not known for technical services. We're really known for white collar jobs. And in this school that's known for white collar jobs, I met a blue collar three generation union member who immediately took me in and treated me like his nephew. That's part of the unique part, but I don't think that it's unique to me that I have gotten almost all of my jobs based on a referral and a cosign and the work that I've done before that. You know, it might be somebody that you worked with 4 years ago, but they say somebody brings your name up and they say, oh yeah, I remember them because they were phenomenal with me that day.
Overall, I benefited a lot from my older members kind of taking me under their wing and doing the on-the-job training, making sure that I understood the facets of things. At a certain point, I had a member who took me under his wing and showed me all the contracts. And so it was, things just worked out in a way that I don't know that I'd be able to say this is the path. This is the definite trajectory. But I was curious enough and they were willing enough to show me.
So I think the whole life process is probably unique because you really would have to be bloodline, right? Your parent would have to have this in the home for you to grow up with it in the home. Back then, I felt like I was a pretty rare child until I got to the Del East and I met other rare children. And I was like, huh, this is my family. You guys know what I'm talking about. And that became key for me to, that's why I said being on site during the process of networking, what you're really looking for is your, these commonalities, these things you can relate to, associate with, you can gravitate towards. You're looking for, you know, do I belong here? Does these things match what I'm interested in? What's piquing my interest?
Who are the best kinds of network contacts?
Gosh, I'd say people who understand the value of time and what it takes to get into certain positions and who have a vision. It may not be your vision, but it may help shape your vision, may help shape your goals or things you help to achieve. I think that we have to expand our networks. I think that we have to identify people who may be adaptable in ways that we hadn't anticipated before, so that we can again create the environment that we were used to prior to this.
Who do you network with? If I'm in a room and I'm looking around and I'm trying to find the person that I network with, I'm looking for someone that certainly I relate with, someone that I identify with. That's definitely going to be, that's a natural thing. That's not something I have to push. I was glad that I didn't engage into the technical side of this industry first, overwhelmed with the model numbers of different devices and new technology. And I like those conversations, right? But the real growth, those devices went out of, before the conversation was over, they were already outdated, right? And it's like that now. So you don't have to lock in on your memory and memorizing every key terminology and the language we use when we're talking to one another. But pay attention to the philosophy. Listen to the ideology of the persons when they're communicating. Do they care about the show? Do they feel they are impacting the performance even though they're not performing?
Again, it goes back to me, mutualism. People who are not looking to network to climb, but people who are, like you said, people who are networking for relationships and just to be able to do something for someone. I prefer to network with those types of people. It's how I've built my career, networking with those types of folks. It's really who I keep in contact with. And if I lost everything, I could build with one person who's mutual like that from square one again.
Live event workers take care of each other. And even if we lose everything, we can rebuild if we have each other for mutual aid and protection. Live event workers need stronger, more resilient professional networks. In a business where who you know matters, we want to know you and you to know us. Connect with us at liveeventworkers.com. This is the Live Event Worker Podcast. Thanks for listening.